How about then you'll be ready for the exam at the end of the class, right? So, out of, in Bhagavad Gita, there are how many verses of Bhagavad Gita? How many verses in Bhagavad Gita? That's the third answer. That's an answer, but that's not the answer. 18. There's 18 chapters. How many verses? 700, right. So, out of those verses of Bhagavad Gita, the topic that has more verses than any other topic is the three modes of nature, which means that it's a very important subject matter. Not only there's a whole chapter dedicated to it, but in many other places in Bhagavad Gita, the topic of material nature and its role in self-realization, God-realization, the journey of the soul towards this, towards its perfection, the ultimate destination of the soul. Understanding material nature and the modes of material nature and navigating our way properly through that field is important. Another point is that chapter 14 is the chapter of the three modes of material nature, and it's amazing. It comes after chapter 13. And chapter 13 of Bhagavad Gita has, is called Sankhya. Those of you that are conversant in Bhagavad Gita know that Sankhya is discussed in the first part of chapter 2. Sankhya is the distinction between matter and spirit. The divisions of matter and spirit, distinguishing between the two, matter and spirit, and identifying this, the self, to be in the category of spirit, not in the category of matter and combinations of matter. This is not a popular subject with modern science, because modern science wants us to believe that we're a product of matter. Life, chemical evolution. Life evolves from matter. Right? Life evolves from matter. And, you know, the story goes that once upon a time, there was a primordial soup, and some lightning, some other energy from the outside of that soup came and gave the energy to make from the soup amino acids. The amino acids got together with other amino acids and they formed proteins. And the proteins got together and formed complex proteins. And the complex proteins got together and formed life. And life evolved in its various stages of complexity up to the human form of life. So all that life is and all that we are is combinations of matter. That's the story, basically, of chemical evolution up to complex forms of life. And the Vedic picture, just to make it really clear, isn't that. The Vedic picture is life comes from life. And because of the presence of life, or the soul, then arrangements of matter around the conscious being, the life energy soul, form according to the modes of nature, guna, and the kind of activities that one has done up to that particular point, or karma. Guna and karma determine the forms of life that we find ourselves in. And the modes of nature are acting at the present time to impel
Does this as karma is acting similarly to, to say, maybe a nice word is tendencies. There's tendencies that are born of the modes of nature. Tendencies of the mode of goodness. There's three modes of nature, and there's mixing of the three modes of nature. So, tendencies in the quality of goodness include kindness, truthfulness, cleanliness, regulation, compassion, nice qualities, things that we like when we find them in people or find them in life. We like them. Mode of goodness. Knowledge, tranquility, compassion, qualities of goodness. Qualities born of the mode of passion is creating, doing, working hard to achieve a result. Competition. It's big. It's, you know, competition. Not just in the sports field. In life, competing, winning, defeating, challenging, warrior. It's mode of passion. And mode of ignorance is indolence, laziness, sleep, intoxication, madness, depression, and so on. If you want to see, there's a screen right here. And we're not there yet, but we'll get there. So come on over. Kids, why don't you come a little closer? You're not afraid of me. Come a little closer, then we'll have more room. You're good. Okay. Thank you. Okay, so mode of goodness, to describe the qualities or characteristics. Those who are moved by the quality of goodness are like that. They exhibit characteristics like that. And those moved by the mode of passion, it impels or it's pushing us towards those kinds of things. And the other kinds of things, goodness, passion, ignorance. And it works like, very much like, the primary colors, like this projector. It works off of, you can adjust the colors, but commonly, it's a little different with digital things, but with paint, it's yellow, red, and blue. And if you mix the right combination of yellow, red, and blue, you can get any of the colors. In New York City, right? I wasn't born in New York City, but I lived for some time in our New York temple. And I know that there's a place in Manhattan called Pinchicks, and they make paints. And so you can take a little paint chip, and they have a little device. They send it through the refractive index of what are the waves of color within that paint chip, and they can make you a very expensive, exact replica of that color because they know how to mix the colors and get any color. Similarly, there's three modes of nature, and by mixing the three modes of nature, you get all the varieties of life based upon guna, that's qualities, and karma. So, within Bhagavad Gita, there's five primary topics. They're going to be pictured here one by one, hopefully. One of them is God. Another is the soul. Another is material nature, made of three modes: time, kala, and karma, activity. So we're going to be focusing on this one over here, material nature. But if one understands the commentators of Bhagavad Gita, Baladeva Vidyabhusan specifically says, if one can understand these five topics, which are the topics of Bhagavad Gita, you've understood Bhagavad Gita. The goal is to understand God, but it's also to understand who we are. And to understand who we are, along with God, this field of material nature in which we find ourselves is important, and how both karma and guna affect impelling the soul to forget God in different ways. That's described. And then time moves the whole thing. This is an energy of God. In fact, they're all energies of God. The soul is a conscious energy of God. This is an unconscious energy of God. This is directly God's time energy and primitive activities. These four are eternal, and this is temporary. Material nature isn't created any more than the soul is created or time is created. The configuration of material nature changes through passage of time. So our topic is going to be discussing material nature. And let's see if we can go back and get the picture on. Of this chapter, Krishna is going to explain how to overcome the modes of material nature. He says that without exception, in this world, everyone is influenced by the modes of nature. But it's possible to overcome and become free from the modes of nature, become transcendental to them. As that was stated in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is wanting Arjuna, which means he's wanting us, to go beyond the modes of nature. So the chapter explains how to. That's the best, that the icing and the cherry at the end. Okay, ready?
The subject matter of Bhagavad Gita contains five main subjects. They are God, Ishvara, soul, Jiva, material nature, Prakriti, time, Kala, and proven as a karma.
And we'll be focusing on material nature.
This chapter presents knowledge about material nature. How the living entity becomes conditioned by material nature and how he can ultimately become liberated.
So the first part is the way that Krishna presents it is very fascinating.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "Again, I shall declare to you this supreme wisdom, the best of all knowledge, knowing which all the sages have attained the supreme perfection. By becoming fixed in this knowledge, one can attain to the transcendental nature like my own. Thus established, one is not born at the time of creation or disturbed at the time of dissolution.
The pure soul becomes conditioned in contact with material nature."
So that was the Mahima section. Here's the wonderful glories. By hearing this chapter, you'll be able to understand, like the great sages, how to be undisturbed in all conditions of life. So here's how the soul, initially coming in contact with material nature, becomes bewildered.
The total material substance, or Brahman, is the source of birth. And it is that Brahman that I impregnate, making possible the births of all living beings. It should be understood that all species of life, O son of Kunti, are made possible by birth in this material nature, and that I am the seed-giving father. Material nature consists of three modes: goodness, passion, and ignorance. When the eternal living entity comes in contact with nature, he becomes conditioned by these modes.
Higher modes condition the living entity.
important in that previous section is the Vedic picture of by the Lord's glancing over the field of the material energy, via his glance, the living entities are carried and literally impregnated within that field of prakriti, material nature, and then due to contact with the modes of nature, the living entity then evolves in different forms. Now it's a little more detail how those modes condition that living entity. It has nothing to do with material nature.
The mode of goodness being purer than the others is illuminating, and it frees one from all sinful reactions. Those situated in that mode become conditioned by a sense of happiness and knowledge. The mode of passion is born of unlimited desires and longings. And because of this, the embodied living entity is bound to material, fruitive actions. O son of Bharata, know that the mode of darkness, born of ignorance, is the delusion of all embodied living entities. The results of this mode are madness, indolence, and sleep, which bind the conditioned soul. The mode of goodness conditions one to happiness, passion conditions one to fruitive action, and ignorance, covering one's knowledge, binds one to madness. Sometimes the mode of goodness becomes prominent, defeating the modes of passion and ignorance. Sometimes the mode of passion defeats goodness and ignorance. And at other times, ignorance defeats goodness and passion. In this way, there is always competition for supremacy.
Isn't that our experience? The way that it works is something like I remember from 8th grade science about genes, and there's prominent and recessive genes, something like that. There's when a mode of nature is being exhibited, it should be understood the other two modes are also present. They're just recessive. So mode of goodness is prominent. So because of the influence of the mode of goodness, then qualities and behaviors corresponding to the mode of goodness, they're exhibited. But that's supposing here's this mode of goodness, primarily personality, who has this competing tendency for passion and ignorance, and all of a sudden the mode of goodness person becomes really angry, and then it just disappears and they're very calm and peaceful again. It happens. Or a real good person does something, they start chasing the carrot and go running after fruitive activities and become very competitive, and then they let go of that, and again the mode of goodness. So that's how it works. It can be, you know, somebody's very much in the mode of passion, and like in New York, just on the other side of the Holland Tunnel, which is, you go from Manhattan to New Jersey, there was this huge billboard some years ago that said, commit a random act of kindness. Commit a random act of, every now and then, be kind. You know, can you primarily passionate, but every now and then, have a little goodness, please. And competing for supremacy, the modes of nature are, that's how it's acting, that's what Krishna is describing. So there's the influences of the modes of nature are there due to material contact, and even one mode or another mode may be prominent, they're competing all the time. And so to become free from the modes, the indication is even the mode of goodness has its trace of passion and ignorance. One has to go beyond that into transcendence. That's going to be explained coming up.
Manifestation of the three modes and how to recognize the predominant mode.
Now not too much.
The manifestations of the mode of goodness can be experienced when all the gates of the body are illuminated by knowledge.
In the mode of goodness, one can see things in the right position, one can hear things in the right position, and one can taste things in the right position. One becomes cleansed inside and outside.
So, the mode of goodness is better. We'll hear a little bit about the other modes.
Srimad Bhagavatam further enumerates the qualities of the mode of goodness. Mind and sense control, sticking to one's prescribed duty, tolerance, mercy, truthfulness, satisfaction in any condition, faith in the spiritual master, being endurance at improper action, simplicity and humbleness.
Sound like a Boy Scout. Because I was a Boy Scout for a while when I was young. These are your tolerance, truthfulness, mercy. Doesn't have faith in the spiritual master, but simplicity, humility. These are qualities of goodness. And when we find these qualities of goodness, as they're described in Bhagavatam, similarly in Bhagavad Gita, it's very nice. Then,
when there is an increase in the mode of passion, the symptom, great attachment, fruitive activity, intense endeavor, an uncontrollable desire and hankering develop.
Quality of the mode of passion, material desire, great endeavor, audacity, false pride, sense gratification, dissatisfaction even in gain, considering oneself better than others.
Does it sound like your workplace? A little bit? Something like that? Mode of passion, fruit of activity, intense fruit of activity. Great endeavor, false pride, dissatisfaction even in gain. These are scriptural descriptions of the symptoms of the mode of passion. And?
Rash eagerness to fight, fondness for hearing oneself praise, tendency to ridicule others, advertising one's own prowess, justifying one's actions by one's strength.
When there is an increase in the mode of ignorance, darkness, inertia, madness, and illusion are manifested.
Quality of the mode of ignorance, intolerant anger, stinginess, fear and violent hatred, living as a parasite, thinking without scriptural authority. Quarrel and hypocrisy, chronic fatigue, depression, sleeping too much, false expectations and laziness.
Good music to go along with that. So now we have these three modes with their characteristics and the competition for supremacy and the poor living entity being moved this way, that way by the modes of nature's influence.
Result of action within the three modes and destination after death.
So there's actions impelled by the modes and then there's consequences of those actions impelled by the modes, where the soul goes after death depending upon the modes of nature.
When one dies in the mode of goodness, he attains to the pure higher planets of the great sages. When one dies in the mode of passion, he takes birth among those engaged in fruitive activities. And when one dies in the mode of ignorance, he takes birth in the animal kingdom. The result of pious action is pure and is said to be in the mode of goodness. But action done in the mode of passion results in misery. And action performed in the mode of ignorance results in foolishness. From the mode of goodness, real knowledge develops. From the mode of passion, greed develops. And from the mode of ignorance develop foolishness, madness, and illusion. Those situated in the mode of goodness gradually go upward to the higher planets. Those in the mode of passion live on the earthly planets. And those in the abominable mode of ignorance go down to the hellish world.
So different activities born of the modes of nature, different destinations of the soul after this life, depending upon the mode of nature with which we associate. Now, we're discussing chapter 14, but the female voice that you heard, the female voice that you hear is the one that put this together, Jairadhe, very capable, creative person. That's her voice, and she's taken the time to take these messages from other chapters of other parts of Bhagavad Gita to give you a description of what it says elsewhere, and some of the other places in Bhagavad Gita about the modes of nature.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, according to the modes of nature acquired by the embodied soul, one's faith can be of three kinds, in goodness, in passion, or in ignorance. Even the food each person prefers is of three kinds, according to the three modes of material nature. The same is true of sacrifices, austerities, and charity. Now, hear of the distinctions between them.
So faith, that was mentioned in the previous slide, faith is influenced by the modes of nature. The foods one is attracted to is influenced by the modes of nature. Sacrifices, because we all do some kind or another of sacrifice, austerity, charity, they're influenced by the modes of nature. Okay, so you want to pick one of these? These are those six things that are mentioned. Any selection? Happiness. You want to click on happiness?
Go ahead.
Just move the... Just click on it.
Oh, best of the Bharatas, now please hear from me about the three kinds of happiness by which the conditioned soul enjoys, and by which he sometimes comes to the end of all distress. That which in the beginning may be just like poison, but at the end is just like nectar, and which awakens one to self-realization, is said to be happiness in the mode of goodness. That happiness which is derived from contact of the senses with their objects, and which appears like nectar at first, but poison at the end, is said to be of the nature of passion. And that happiness which is blind to self-realization, which is delusion from beginning to end, and which arises from sleep, laziness, and illusion, is said to be of the nature of ignorance.
Let's go to faith. Just move the cursor and click on faith. Very good.
According to one's existence under the various modes of nature, one evolves a particular kind of faith. Men in the mode of goodness worship the demigods. Those in the mode of passion worship the demons. And those in the mode of ignorance worship ghosts and spirits.
Those faith according to the modes of nature, happiness according to the modes of nature. Let's go to food.
food dear to those in the mode of goodness increase the duration of life, purify one's existence, and give strength, health, happiness, and satisfaction. Such foods are juicy, fatty, wholesome, and pleasing to the heart. Foods that are too bitter, too sour, salty, hot, pungent, dry, and burning are dear to those in the mode of passion. Such foods cause distress, misery, and disease. Food prepared more than 3 hours before being eaten, food that is tasteless, decomposed, and putrid, and food consisting of remnants and untouchable things, is dear to those in the mode of darkness.
Worker, let's go to worker. Then charity.
One who performs his duty without association with the mode of material nature, without false ego, with great determination and enthusiasm, and without wavering in success or failure, is said to be a worker in the mode of goodness. The worker who is attached to work and the fruits of work, desiring to enjoy those fruits, and who is greedy, always envious, impure, and moved by joy and sorrow, is said to be in the mode of passion. The worker who is always engaged in work against the injunctions of the scripture, who is materialistic, obstinate, cheap, and expert in insulting others, and who is lazy, always morose, and procrastinating, is said to be a worker in the mode of ignorance.
Let's look at charity.
Charity given out of duty, without expectation of return, at the proper time and place, and to a worthy person, is considered to be in the mode of goodness. But charity performed with the expectation of some return, or with a desire for fruitive results, or in a grudging mood, is said to be charity in the mode of passion. And charity performed at an impure place, at an improper time, to unworthy persons, or without proper attention and respect, is said to be in the mode of ignorance.
Okay, so we're going to go forward now to back to chapter 14. We have to, let's see what we have to do. Can you just click on that forward button? It'll take us back to the main menu. Yeah.
Talism is a transformation of herbs, but smoke is better than dry wood. And fire is still better, for by fire we can derive the benefits of superior knowledge. Srimad Bhagavatam explains that similarly, passion is better than ignorance, but goodness is best, because by goodness one can come to realize the absolute truth.
So, comparative and superlative. From the Bhagavad Gita perspective and from the Bhagavatam perspective, the mode of goodness is best. So, obviously the indication from this chapter and the whole of Bhagavad Gita, better to be in the mode of goodness. Then there's a, but that's also binding message also.
Krishna explains to Uddhava how to change the mode one is situated in. The predominant mode in plural view is determined by the different scriptures we study, duty habits, drinking choices, your association, your environment, the times of the day you do things, meditation in different ways, the mantras you chant, the samskaras perform, and birth. By constant practice and cultivation, one can situate oneself steadily in the mode of goodness.
So that's from Uddhava Gita, that section of the Bhagavatam where Krishna is speaking to Uddhava. He's also explaining the modes of nature and indicating how to elevate oneself. So the emphasis is by practice and cultivation. By the modes of by those who, if you associate with people in the mode of goodness, that quality becomes your quality. You associate with people who are in the mode of ignorance, and that becomes your quality also. Therefore, for example, parents are very concerned who their children are associating with, because good association, bad association, the quality can change.
And the goodness is there, it is still binding. When it is conditioned to feel that he is advanced in knowledge and better than others, due to a sense of pride and material happiness, repeatedly one may become entangled in birth and death. Repeatedly one may become a philosopher, scientist, or poet with no chance of liberation. Therefore, one must transcend all the three modes.
Now we're going back to chapter 14, Bhagavad Gita. Oops, you have to click on that button.
This divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. The spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. When one properly sees that in all activities no other performer is at work than these modes of nature, and he knows the supreme law who is transcendental to all these modes, he attains my spiritual nature. When the embodied being is able to transcend these three modes associated with the material body, he can become free from birth, death, old age, and their distresses, and can enjoy nectar even in this life. Arjuna inquired, "O my dear Lord, by which symptoms is one known who is transcendental to these three modes? What is his behavior? And how does he transcend the modes of nature?"
We're almost at the end of chapter 14. These are the final three questions, and they're good questions. Krishna has said everyone is bound, but they're by the modes of nature. The transcendentalists, however, are exceptions to that rule. And so Arjuna wants to know if there's qualities of the modes of nature, what's the qualities of those who are transcendental to the modes of nature? What symptoms can we know that someone is beyond the modes of nature? And then second is, how do they act? And then a third is, how do they get there? Like, how do we get there?
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "He who does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they are present, or long for them when they disappear, who is unwavering and undisturbed through all these reactions of the material qualities, remaining neutral and transcendental, knowing that the modes alone are active, who is situated in the self and regards alike happiness and distress, who looks upon a lump of earth, a stone, and a piece of gold with an equal eye, who is equal toward the desirable and the undesirable, who is steady, situated equally well in praise and blame, honor and dishonor, who treats alike both friend and enemy, and who has renounced all material activities, such a person is said to have transcended the modes of nature. One who engages in full devotional service, unfailing in all circumstances, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. And I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman, which is immortal, imperishable, and eternal, and is the constitutional position of ultimate happiness."
The end. So, Sorry for the little technical difficulties here, but there was supposed to be some sound at the end, music along with the narration. So that there are the three final questions. The symptoms, put in very simple language, is neutrality in face of duality. Duality is the nature of this place. Wherever there is light, there is dark. Wherever there is wet, there is dry. There is up and down, and happy and sad, and pleasure, pain, and attraction, repulsion. The place of duality is this realm, and the symptom of the person in transcendence is they're neutral towards duality. And the reason they're neutral towards duality is that they're finding a happiness within in relation to the Absolute. The Absolute, Krishna is identifying as Himself. He, very important verse in Bhagavad Gita, He is the pratishtha, the basis and support of the impersonal Brahman. So sometimes there's an idea to seek being neutral by trying to become one with Brahman. That's an idea that's out there. And Krishna is saying, I'm the basis of that Brahman. So, taking shelter of Krishna, one who finds happiness in their relationship with Krishna, that's the means for transcendence, specifically mentioned as being engaged in devotional service to the personality of Godhead Krishna, permits one to come to that stage of transcending the modes of nature. And then that's also the activity. The activity is the activity of devotion to the Supreme. So now we'll just go back a bit. There's activity that's impelled by the modes of nature. Let's say someone says something really mean. And a common reaction to someone that says something really mean is you feel hurt. And that may result in your saying something hurtful back. You know, get back, or just withdrawing and going into a sulking mood, or action and reaction, just reacting to the circumstances of the modes of nature. Something's coming your way, and just become reactive to the modes of nature. The transcendental position, however, is one doesn't identify with that position of duality, one identifies exclusively with your relationship with Krishna, some opportunity to serve Krishna, and whatever is appropriate to serve Krishna in any of life's circumstances, that's where one's consciousness goes. That's a for example. And any other circumstance of life, if what Krishna is advocating in chapter 14, besides describing the plight of the soul mixing with the modes of nature, There's the escape route, or the position of transcendence. And that's the whole of Bhagavad Gita is recommending transcendence. Becoming attached to the Absolute realm. Becoming attached to Krishna. By becoming attached to Krishna, the modes of nature which are under His direction, they slacken their influence upon the soul, and instead the symptoms of transcendence, illumination, inspiration to serve God in any condition of life. Great, great happiness, natural, from springing from the soul, not dependent upon the circumstance. Oh, it's a nice circumstance, now I'm happy. Oh, it's a troubling circumstance, now I'm unhappy. Not being moved by the circumstance, but from within, but the happiness of devotion from within. Okay, so any thoughts on the presentation of Bhagavad Gita chapter 14 and those other parts of Bhagavad Gita that also speak about the modes of nature? The modes of nature are binding upon the living conditioned living entity, and it's nice to know if you're in bondage, what's the nature of that bondage, and how to become free from it. That's what chapter 14 is presenting. So any comments or questions? Yes?
What would be the best way to get out of the
boundless of freedom?
Get out of the boundless of freedom.
The best way is what Krishna described at the end of the chapter, through the medium of devotional service to the Supreme. The systems of yoga are linking with the Supreme. So when you link your consciousness with the Supreme, that elevates you through the modes of nature, towards the mode of goodness, and then eventually above the modes of nature, into transcendence. And of all the different systems of yoga described in chapter 6, there's one that's the best amongst them all. And the one that's the best amongst them all is devotional service. Shraddhavan bhajate yomam. That's the verse. Yoginam api sarvesham madgatenam taratmana. Shraddhavan means one who possesses shraddha, faith, with faith. Bhajate yomam, engaging in devotional service unto me, unto Krishna. Engaging in devotional service unto Krishna with great faith. Samayukta uttama mataha. It's the uttama form, the topmost form of yoga. And then the next chapters, Krishna says, I'm going to explain how you can do that, how you can perform devotional service unto me with great faith. So that's chapter 7 and 8 and 9. But in short, devotional service, connecting, linking with the Supreme through devotion to the Supreme, that's the best way to transcend the modes of nature. And if we don't make that effort, then we continue to be conditioned by the modes of nature. We're just like a piece of wood that's floating on the ocean. When the waves go up, the piece of wood goes up. The waves come crashing down, the wood goes crashing down. We're like that, just moved by the modes of nature. Sometimes up, sometimes down. Sometimes here, sometimes there. Helplessly being moved by the modes of nature. To a degree, unlike a piece of wood, we have free will. And we can try to choose something. But even if you try to choose something, the modes of nature can be very strong and impel one to doing some other kind of activity, or exhibiting a quality that you don't like, just impelled strongly by the modes of nature. That's not healthy, it's not natural. That's a diseased condition for the soul, and the healthy condition for the soul is this other. And it's an opportunity that we have if we understand the science of how to do it. Krishna is presenting that in Bhagavad Gita. How was it hearing all this when you are not familiar with Bhagavad Gita? It's okay?
Oh, it's very eye-opening.
Okay.
Just to get a different perspective. And I'm definitely seeing the different modes. Again, it's very eye-opening. Because in that way, I can distinguish between, good, passion.
And ignorance.
And ignorance.
Yeah. And then the best of all, towards the end, is how to go beyond being conditioned by all three of them. Because it's important to understand this. If I only have those three options and I choose preferentially, as far as I can, the mode of goodness, know for certain that the other modes are still there. And sometimes they're going to act, and sometimes the other one is going to act, and predominating over the quality of goodness. And I may not wish for that to happen, but I can't control that because they're competing for supremacy just by the nature of the modes. So the advocacy of Bhagavad Gita overall is become situated even beyond that one, beyond the good one. What's beyond good? And it's transcendence. And the realm of transcendence, it may help to go to the Sanskrit. The word in Sanskrit for goodness is sattva. But with sattva, there's rajas and tamas, there's passion and ignorance. Then there's shuddha sattva. Shuddha means pure. Pure means no mixture. That's transcendent. There's no mixture of the other modes. There's no mixture even of goodness, because goodness has its mixture. It's something, a visual for me, is something like a big vat of white paint. And you take a little eyedropper of red, and you squirt a little red into the white paint, and you stir it. It mixes in. It's still predominantly white, but it's off-white. A little blue, and stir that in, and it's blue and red mixed with the white. It's off-white. Now, how much white do you have to put in until there's no red and no blue anymore? You can't. It's still going to be off to some degree. You can try to more white and more white, but there's still... And as long as the mode of nature is there with passion or ignorance, not only there's going to be an action that's impelled by those modes, but a reaction that comes from those modes. Action, reaction. And then with that reaction, it becomes more polluted or contaminated with the mixture of the modes of nature. And keep going over a period of time, and the off-white gets really off-white. Even you add more white, there's going to be some more blue and some more red. Over time, that's what happens. Even for a good-intentioned person that's trying for goodness as much as possible, it's going to happen, it's going to happen, it's going to happen. It just keeps happening. So, transcendence is required. It's what Bhagavad Gita is advocating. And that means become fixed in one's connection with the Supreme. In the best way of connecting with the Supreme, of the various means of connecting with the Supreme, acting with love and devotion unto the Supreme. That's the best. And so earlier chapters of Bhagavad Gita describe that in detail. Chapter 7, chapter 8, chapter 9. Here is the modes of nature and how they're acting. Anything? Yes?
How does the modes of nature influence us like that? Is it some kind of a force?
Yes, outside? It's some kind of a force outside.
Or is it like inherent by our body? Or?
But that's also outside. The body is outside the soul. Who we are is spirit soul. It's like, okay, here's some light fixture up on the ceiling. And it's probably not an incandescent lamp, but incandescent lamps have this little filament and it gives off clear light. But supposing the glass around the filament, you paint it pink or green or blue. So the light that comes out is pink or green or blue. But the light that's inside is white and clear. Similarly, the consciousness of the soul is white and clear. But because of the body and things outside of the body as well, that it's impelling, it's conditioning or covering the consciousness of the soul, so it comes out colored or it comes out according to the modes of nature. But that's not us. The impelling forces are those things. Unfortunately, we identify with those things instead of who we really are. You know, I'm happy, I'm sad. I'm feeling pleasure, I'm feeling pain. I'm hungry, I'm satisfied. I'm thirsty, my thirst is quenched. We're identifying with those things instead of the conscious being that's within. And that's the effect of the mode. It covers the consciousness of who we really are. And likewise, it covers the consciousness of who is the Supreme and our relationship with the Supreme. So, they act outside, as you said, but it's not. It's both a body which is outside, and you know the world around us which is outside, and that's acting on our senses. That's acting on our consciousness. That's acting on the soul. It's something. It's the modes of nature is outside of the soul, including the body. and senses, and what the senses are perceiving. Like studies have shown, music or color, like what color you paint your walls, it affects your mind. Or the music that you hear affects your mind, or the food that you eat affects the modes of, if the modes of nature are affecting from the outside, and they're affecting the mind and the body. Yes.
From the presentation, what is the charity and austerity and what of the
best? Do you want to see that one? We did the charity one, actually. Where you give to the right persons, the right time and place. And then the last one was the guy that wanted beer and...
Austerity.
So, yeah. Austerity. Austerity that elevates consciousness. Austerity that one accepts because it's necessary to get your fruit of gain. An austerity that's parching the elements of the body in the beginning and in the end. It leads to degradation of consciousness. Yes?
Maharaj, we are choosing the modes, or the modes are choosing us?
It's both. Due to our past choices, the modes are impelling. But we don't have to submit to that impelling. We can make other choices. But it's not just a matter of snap your fingers and say, okay, from this point forward, it's no passion and ignorance, it's just goodness. Because both are acting. Going into the future and from the past, it's the conditioning influences there. So we should, as that little slide that showed what Krishna was telling Uddhava, by constant practice, we can move towards a particular mode. By constant practice.
Okay. Then in that case, there is not any supremacy of goodness.
Well, even if you cultivate the quality of goodness, it's still conditioning or binding upon the soul. Because you do activities in goodness, and you get a reaction in goodness, as you do with passion, reaction in passion, and ignorance in ignorance. Okay. This little boy is very curious. Anything else? Yes.
There is good in goodness. And,
sure.
And but is there any good in the other two also? Is there any good, or sleeping is associated with?
It's less good. Yeah, there's some good. There's some good, but it's less good. Because, you take it this way, say the mode of passion is predominant, but there's some goodness. The mode of ignorance is predominant, there's some goodness. But it's not as much as the mode of goodness is predominant. And there's some passion and some ignorance.
Like sleeping, okay, it does give you rest or something. When you do need sleep also, you cannot...
Yes, that's right. So, that's good. But supposing, you're a realized transcendentalist. Just supposing. From that spiritual energy, the body is nourished by another source than by sleeping. So, commonly, those who become elevated saintly persons, sadhus, their sleeping requirements diminish. And sometimes they even forget to sleep because they're so absorbed in transcendence. It's not like, I'm going to be an austere person and not sleep today. It's just, it diminishes the nourishing of the elements of the body through sleep. Now, for the rest of us, Krishna's advocacy is being moderate in one's eating, sleeping, work, and recreation. being moderate in one's habits. That's a feature of goodness. Not too much, not too little. Too much and too little can be harmful. But as one's transcendental awareness rises, consciousness, spiritual consciousness becomes stronger. The other modes and the requirements that or the good that they do, it fades. It's taken care of in a different way. Yes. Neutrality in the face of duality, yes.
How do you find the balance between neutrality and determination?
Your question is puzzling because it's not, you're not something on two different sides that you need to balance. Neutrality says, this is more important. And because this is more important, in regards to that, you know, it can be this way, it can be that way. Because this is so important. My consciousness is invested in this, which is so important. So it can be raining or it can be sunny. Either way is okay. I just dumped because I'm absorbed in this. Something like that. So when there's a happiness within, then there's neutrality towards duality. Now, determination is supposing the duality ramps up and it becomes not just rain, but torrential rain and tornado and extreme. And one can be, I'm not budging from this position. That's, you know, the firmness of one's convictions in the alternative to those options that I'm indifferent to. The example is coming to mind. Prabhupada told this story a number of times. One of his disciples was named, or is named, you know, because he comes here to Houston, Giriraj Maharaj. So could he go to that other room, your son? He can find some space in that other room because he likes to make noise more than needed. Okay. His father was very wealthy. And Giriraj Maharaj became a devotee. And at Prabhupada's request, he went to India and served in India. He became the president of the Jewel Temple. His father bribed him. He said, you leave the Hare Krishna movement and I'll give you $1 million. And he wrote his father back, no thank you. And Prabhupada said that to all the industrialists. This person, his father is offering him $1 million just to stop being a devotee. $1 million. He said, no thanks, Dad. Not for a million. I don't want to give up devotion to Krishna. You're chasing after $1 million, and he's saying, no, thank you for $1 million. Just see. So there's determination. Indifference to duality. But with strong, supposing, well, here it is, a check for $10 million. You name your number, million, here it is. No? Determination. Anything else? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, I have two questions.
Okay.
The first question is a bit long, so...
Bit long. Okay.
My idea of religion, or what I have, growing up in India as a Hindu, basically is be good, do good, you know, lead an honest life, obey the rules of the land, pay the taxes, you know, follow the road rules and so forth, and do not harm others. And so that is true of most religions, you know.
Yes, it is.
Be it you're
sounds
a Christian.
Very familiar.
Muslim or a Hindu.
Yeah.
So is Krishna telling that is not good enough? Or does he advocate a change of lifestyle?
Well, so go back to his question. Is there goodness in the other modes? And there's goodness in the other modes, and there's goodness in goodness. But, as you say, not good enough. Goodness is not good enough. What's better than goodness? And then the answer is shuddha sattva, or pure goodness. But there's no mixture of the modes. That's superlative. That's best. There's good, there's better, and there's best. Superlative. No other modes, even touching the consciousness of the soul, attracting the consciousness of the soul, attracting behaviors. So, it's good is good, but better than good is best. That's transcendence. And in that position of transcendence, there's no return to the modes of nature.
So is that not available in Hinduism or Islam or Christianity as it is practiced today?
Well, that, you know, as it's practiced today, that's a big phrase. There's what the teaching says, and there's as it's practiced today. Let's just go to what the teaching says. Largely, the teaching is be good. In the teaching, there's also dedication to God. And that helps support being good. But the clarity of who is God and how to love Him is not so clear, and therefore how to do that isn't as clear, and therefore it's more teaching-wise, it's more good than it is transcendence. Although transcendence is certainly part of the teaching. It's something like in the 90% of the Vedas is karmakanda teachings. That is, you have a desire, you approach a particular ishtadeva, a worshipable deity, and you propitiate that particular worshipable deity with a particular form of sacrifice unto that deity, and the deity bestows upon you the desired fruit, and your piety increases as well. You get, and in the next life you get something even better. That's largely what it is. But even within that section of the Vedas, it speaks of there's a bhokta of the sacrifice, a predominating deity of the sacrifice, a bhokta of the sacrifice. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, bhokta ram yagitapasam. He is the bhokta. Now most people don't think like that. They're not thinking of the bhokta, they're thinking of the ishtadeva that's giving them the thing that they want. And so they worship this one, or that one, or the other one. That's common. And in the Vedic process. But even within that Vedic process, the goal of all the Vedas, just as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, is Vedaishtra Sayar Vayar Aham Eva Vedyo. The goal of the Vedas is to know me. So then take the other processes of religion. Teaching-wise, the goal is to ask anyone of this religion, that religion, the other religion, is the goal of your religion to develop love of God? They'll say yes. That's the goal. Largely, however, the practice is strive to be in the quality of goodness and avoid the things that are sinful. Be good, don't hurt anybody, be charitable, follow the tenets of the scripture. That's what religion means. You follow the laws of God. You're a law-abiding person, laws of God abiding person, and that's how you live your life, in the quality of goodness. And it's true that from the quality of goodness, the peering into the realm of transcendence of, or who is God, becomes, you become more eligible for that. To the window, I can see what's on the other side of the wall better than through the wall. Although I'm not on the other side of the wall, but I can see what's on the other side of the wall through the window. So the window is like the quality of goodness. I can peer into transcendence better. But transcendence is entering into transcendence. That's the goal, love of God. That's the goal. How clearly that's portrayed, the clarity of how desirable God is, how attractive God is, how beautiful He is, how loving He is, the activities that go on in the spiritual world, the attractiveness of being there instead of here, being consciously with God instead of consciously with fruitive activities here and just doing it nicely, playing nicely, don't hurt anybody when you're getting your fruitive activities accomplished, kind of thing. It's different. Address your question.
Yes, Maharaj. The follow-up question was that why Krishna? I know it's one of the five topics which we didn't talk about, but why Krishna? Why not Christ or Allah or even any of the demigods?
That's a broad topic. One sense of answer to your response to your question is they're not different. Allah, Jehovah, Buddha, Krishna, they're in the same category of forms of the personality of God, or at least in the case of Buddha, an avatar described within the Vedas, an avatar of Vishnu. So, as Prabhupada would say with someone that's a Christian, I'm not trying to persuade you to be something other than a Christian, but be a real Christian. What the teachings say, follow what the teachings say. And if you're not following what the teachings say, then I say you're not a Christian. And the teachings say, thou shalt not kill, so please stop killing. Follow your teachings. And that's the behavior side, and then the identification of who is the personality of Godhead. What are his qualities? What are his characteristics? What's his form? What's his name? What are his activities? The more that you have that understanding about somebody, the more the capacity to love that somebody comes. Supposing I say to you, I have a very wonderful friend and I really would like you to meet them. I can't tell you their name, I can't tell you where they live, I can't tell you what they do, I can't tell you what they look like, I can't tell you about what they do with other people that makes you love them, but you really should meet them. I really want you to meet them.
Not interested.
Not compared to, let me describe the glories of this person. This is the ways that they exhibit their compassion, this is the way that they relate with other people, this is their loving nature. These things, those things, this is their form, this is their intelligence, this is their wisdom. I want to meet that person. So the impetus to come closer to God is enhanced by the more detail one has of the personality of Godhead, his form, his qualities, his pastimes. Impetus to focus the capacity for love upon that person. And by that, transcendence beyond the modes of nature. Okay.
Thank you, Mukesh.
Wow, this is a book. In certain condition, modes of passion, something to mode of goodness elevates. In certain condition, the mode of passion elevates to the mode of goodness. When you eat certain vegetables, it affects you. Affects your mode. If mode of passion is certain to me, elevates to goodness. I can't. Why are we not supposed to eat those vegetables? I can't. Oh. Disappears?
Why is it? I'm saying the onion and garlic is not supposed to eat.
Is that what they want to know? Somebody wants to know? Why not onion and garlic?
That's my guess.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, onion and garlic are in the category of vegetable. They're, as far as the modes of nature is concerned, they're just like anything. They're trees in the mode of goodness, trees in the mode of passion, trees in the mode of ignorance. They're vegetables in the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance. So like trees in the mode of goodness, they produce very nice flowers, very nice fruits. Some trees don't produce very nice flowers, very nice fruits, and some just have thorns and sticklers and poisonous and, you know, mode of ignorance. They're trees, you know, that haven't moved to their species. So vegetables also, some may be more inclined to promote the quality of goodness. Some the more the mode of passion, and some the more of ignorance. So from that slide that showed onions and, you know, organic onions, there's medicinal purposes to garlic. Taking garlic for medicinal purposes is one thing, if there's some particular requirement. However, there are other items in the quality of goodness that produce, as a result, the mode of goodness instead. There's medicine in the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance. And then so according to the modes of nature, we select those foods that promote the quality of goodness. And the scripture teaches us which foods promote the quality of goodness, and so not all vegetables do the same. Trying to remember during the Jamundacharya, when he was a small boy, he became a king. And his father wanted him to come back to his Brahminical life. So you may know this story. His father asked the disciple on his deathbed, "Please rescue my son, who is now a king, to come." And he stopped his life of devotion to come back. So the disciple figured a very clever method. He went to the king's cook and provided the king's cook with a certain vegetable that promoted the quality of truthfulness. I forget the name of the vegetable. You know the name of the vegetable? A particular leafy green vegetable. I'd like to have some of that every day. So the king had it every day. He really liked it. It went on for a whole year. And then one day, a year later, that vegetable wasn't on the king's plate. So the king called for his cook and said, "What happened? The vegetable wasn't there. I'd like the vegetable." It said, "Well, a man comes and brings this every day, but just this morning he didn't bring it today." He said, "I want to meet that person that brings this vegetable every day. Can you bring him here?" That's how he got audience with the king. And then when he came to meet the king, he said, "Your father left a treasury for you, and I know where it is, and I'll take you there." He said, "Great, let's go. I can use some more treasury in my royal treasury." "No, no, you can't bring all your army and everybody. It's just you and me. Let's go." "Okay, let's go. I trust you. You're a nice Brahmin." And he took him to, as he was taking him to the place, it was the place where Ranganath was worshipped, but he was reciting Bhagavad Gita. And as he was reciting Bhagavad Gita, it came back to him, his life of devotion. Anyway, all of that is, there are certain vegetables that promote more the quality of goodness, and some vegetables promote more the quality of passion, and some that promote the quality of ignorance. Mushrooms. They grow in the darkness, and they promote ignorance. Some people may say, "Oh, I like them." But at least we don't accept, those that are following Bhagavad Gita carefully, don't accept because it promotes the quality of ignorance or something that promotes the quality of passion. We offer to Krishna those in the quality of goodness and accept those as our fruits. That's the reason. Okay. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna.